harping on wars we fight and griping about the great things of peace. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the wheel of life, I'm fighting and fighting to die to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far dark key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. Sorry, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, here's kind of a sexy item. Not good sexy, but kinky and weird. One of the big noises in the among the new freshman Democrats in the House of Representatives was Ilhan Omar. She's a Somali, I believe. She is a serious weirdo on many levels. Here's some interesting a testimony in one of the cases she's involved in that suggests she is an agent of Qatar, one of the Gulf states, and has a big weakness for weird sex. Qatari insider describes Ilhan Omar as a sex maniac, very weak when it comes to money and sex. there was a deposition put forth by a Kuwaiti-born Canadian businessman, Alan Bender, who was giving evidence in the trial of Sheikh Khalid bin Hamad Al Thani. In that deposition, not only did he indicate that Jihad Representative Ilhan Omar, Democrat of Minnesota, is a treasonous paid Qatari agent, but that she can be easily bribed with sex and money, so much so that he said she was a sex maniac and very weak when it comes to money and sex. We must keep in mind that the other deviant behavior by Omar. She was married to two men at once, one being her brother. Allegedly, that was just a part of an immigration scam. But, you know, a scamming we will go. Then who truly knows who the father of her children is? Furthermore, she's been caught in adultery with a married man while married to another man. None of this is surprising. In Bender's affidavit, beginning on page 76, he says, Bender was asked, so she, that's Omar, was recruited by the government of Qatar before she became a member of the United States government. That's what they told me, Bender replied. And they saw her as vulnerability, somebody that they, who has had vulnerabilities rather, and they agreed to fund her. He was asked the following question, and he answered yes. Bender was also asked if they funded her in numerous ways, and he said they did. When asked if she was married at the time, Bender said, I didn't ask that, but they mentioned to me that, I said, would a woman in hijab, because I was under the impression she was a devout Muslim. Quote, a woman in hijab takes bribes, Bender continued. They said, don't be fooled by her headscarf. She's a sex maniac, and she's very weak when it comes to sex and money, and we've got both. Those were two means that Qatar used to exploit and manipulate Omar. Asked again, I asked, where is the serious investigation into this impossible indictment and arrest of a traitor? She's a sitting member of the United States House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Committee. At the least, she should be removed from that position until there's a complete investigation of these claims. She's already given multiple examples of her lawlessness, including that of sex and money. Here are a few of Omar's greatest hits demonstrating this. A lawsuit. Did Omar break the law to be naturalized? A stoning offense? Representative Ilhan Omar was caught living in sin with a married man. Campaign aide Tim Minot. Anyway, there's more to this, but quite a winner, right? Here, this is from The Sun in England, and it's quite graphic. If anybody would like this, this is actually from a year ago, but it's quite graphic. If you'd like me to send it to you, I will. You just email me at paul@paulfromm.com. Young blood. Children are left covered in blood as devout Muslims use knives to slice their heads open during the traditional Ashura show of faith in Iraq. Ashura is a commemoration. They are among the millions of Shia Muslim worshippers currently taking part in annual ceremonies to mourn the death of Imam Hussein, a grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. Babies were even seen participating in the ceremony. He's one, I guess he's a father with a babe in arms, a couple months old. There's blood on the baby, blood all over the man's garb. The images also show babies involved in the ceremonies, with one covered in blood during the event. The men used large knives to cut their heads, while others helped to cut the heads of those around them. The processions and services are held in September, the holiest week in the Shia calendar, Tasua and Ashura. During 10 days of mourning, many of the devotees whip and cut themselves with chains and knives as a way of washing away their sins. There's a picture here of I'd say a 5 or 6 year old boy with a huge knife who's just cut his head. His little white tunic's all covered with blood. A baby is with a pacifier in its mouth is having its head cut. Lebanese Shiite Muslim child is carrying a sword as he bleeds. There's some kid, he doesn't want his head cut, and some bearded guy is cutting him. Boys flagellate themselves and cut themselves with knives to commemorate this Ashura ceremony. the scenes are absolutely bloody. and chains with knives attached are used to whip the body to free it of its sins. There's a guy with a chain, two curved knives whipping his back and cutting himself up. It's barbaric. And, you know, this raises a very important question about this whole diversity thing. You know the slogan, diversity is our greatest strength. Yes, and I on that basis, cancer is our greatest sign of health. I've often thought that this slogan that appears to have been dreamed up by the Anti-Defamation League, and it first surfaced back around, I would say back around 1994, and the first public figure to use this that I know of was Bill Clinton. I mean, the speech he gave in Southern California, he used this, and it was a great hit with a student audience here clapping, thinking this was suitably brilliant. And then it began to be picked up. Our own prime minister, allegedly a conservative, Stephen Harper, used it at a UN gathering in Vancouver. And now, of course, it's part of the mission statements of many major corporations and many government bodies and school boards and so on. And I thought, you know, as a slogan, it's absurd. And the leader of Canada, the People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier, tentatively raised the problem. This is a problem. A year ago, last summer, when he split from the Conservative Party, and he said perhaps there's too much diversity. Well, that was heresy. But you know, when you think about this bacon slogan, diversity is our greatest strength. Diversity necessarily means lack of unity, and as for a nation, what would make a nation? And we were told diversity would be your greatest strength. But what would that mean? That diversity is your greatest strength. Division. That you basically don't have very much in common. That's a strength. Never knowing quite what the other guy wants or thinks. Having to constantly make accommodations for people with practices radically different from your own. This is one of the big stresses that we have in Canada. Constantly having to accommodate very, very strange and different people. Now, is that a strength? Well, no. Frankly, what do I have in common with some guy wearing a turban in Canada who insists on being radically different? It'd be the same as if I showed up in the Punjab in India and insisted on wearing cowboy boots, a string tie, a cowboy hat, and checkered shirt. I would certainly stand out as radically different. Now, they might accept me as a visiting foreigner, but if I said, I don't want to be Indian, but I don't want to be like you at all, well, I have a feeling they'd say, well, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. Diversity is our greatest strength, really. What do I have in common with a man wearing a white cloak, a pork pie of a hat, and has a big bushy beard that looks like so much pubic hair, who has to pray five times a day, a lot of it on company time? And I've worked with people like that. Well, frankly, I don't have anything in common with them. What are they doing in my country? I'll tell you what they're doing in my country. They're taking advantage of all the goodies we offer. If they want to practice their ways, well, why are they doing it here? Well, those thoughts, of course, have occurred to many people, not only me. In fact, when you're first confronted with diversity. Most people reject it as weird. People feel, well, look, you want to be radically different. All right. But why must you do it here? These are profound questions. People feel uncomfortable, and I've known this for many years. People felt uncomfortable with people in turbans and hijabs and kneecaps and burqas and so on. Well, and people on a personal level don't see the great advantage of diversity. They simply do not. And so people would tend to reject this diversity thing. So from a propaganda point of view, this really was clever. As our evil masters and people planners bring more and more radically different people to us, there's a likelihood that many people will reject this and say, well, why don't they bring, if they're going to have immigration, why not have more people like us? In fact, one of the accusations I read just very recently against Donald Trump is that, horror of horror, he's trying to devise means to attract more European immigration to the U.S. What? European immigration? People who would have a much better chance of fitting in because they are, well, much more like most Americans? Well, how dare he? Well, as Greta Thunberg would say, how dare you? That's actually a knock against him. Well, I'll tell you from a propaganda point of view what I think our evil masters decided on was this. Look, some people will, probably most people, feel at the very least uncomfortable with the more and more radically different people being admitted to our countries. So what do we do about this? Well, we have to do several things. They try to repress free speech. That'd be one thing, so that it's more difficult to talk about these things. That's why in Canada there's a big furor, I said furor, not furor, over Islamophobia. Well, what's Islamophobia? Well, literally, it's the fear of Muslims. Gee, that might not be a totally irrational thing. I don't mean every Muslim is a danger. No, of course not. But what about the terrorist? He'd been sentenced to 16 years in jail, but only served, I think, 8 in the UK on this past Friday on London Bridge. He went on a stabbing spree, killed 2 people, wounded 3. Now, they do these things in the name of Islam. And yet, we're supposed to feel guilty if we have negative feelings about Muslims, or fear. Let's just put it that, fear. If a fear of Muslims, well, I would say, got very good reason to be afraid of some Muslims, maybe many Muslims. It is not, as we've been told endlessly, a religion of peace. Or at least in many of its appearances, it's not being a religion of peace. So wouldn't a prudent person be at least a little cautious? Well, they would. That's a prudent person would indeed be cautious. So, from a propaganda point of view, what our masters have decided was this. Invent a slogan that tells you that what you're afraid of or uneasy with is, in fact, a good thing. and repeated endlessly. You know, diversity is our greatest strength. Advertisers have learned this. You get a simple idea, and you just keep repeating it. I think of the Coke commercial. At one point, I think it was things go better with Coke. It doesn't stand a lot of scrutiny, but you know, it associates Coke with being a good thing. If you want to have a good time, drink Coke. Now, that was the drink, not the powdered narcotic. Although, actually, ironically, as an aside, the original Coca-Cola drink, invented in Atlanta back around the turn of the 20th century, did contain some cocaine, which is perhaps why it gave people a bit of a buzz. Anyway, advertisers know that if you take a slogan and repeat it endlessly, it eventually sinks in. It becomes almost like a truth. You know, things go better with Coke, or whatever. Okay, so what the proponents of our genocidal destruction decided was to take this negative of diversity or increasing weirdness and tell us endlessly that it's our greatest strength. You know, you may have thought of it, you may be upset by this diversity that you see, but did you realize it's our greatest strength? And everybody's saying that. You know, well, I should say, official institutions are saying it, and so on. And it reminded me of, I think it was one of the, from one of the Groucho Marx movies, but it's a little vignette, and somebody's sitting at a cheap restaurant and calls the waiter over and says, "Waiter, there's a fly in my soup." And the waiter, you know, very, very, very quick thinking, insists, say, "Oh my gosh, oh no, no, I'll take that bowl away and clean it up and give you another bowl of soup." Very inventively says, "Shh, don't tell anybody or everybody will want one." So you take what would be a gross out, finding a fly, doing the backstroke in your soup, and you twist it around and say, "Well, that's actually something good. Don't tell anybody else because they'll want some too." So that is the way that I see the propaganda playing out with this diversity thing. Well, the Pope was over in Japan, and he told the Japanese that they should accept masses of refugees. Well, if he'd been talking to Angela Merkel's Germany or the United States or Canada, many, at least an officialdom, would have said that was, great Pope, Your Holiness, that's a great idea. Now, basically, what he's asking for the Japanese to do is to commit, what we are being asked to do, commit genocide on the installment plan. Well, the Japanese were not going to be having any of that stuff. And give you the story. It's actually very, very healthy. Yeah, it's really good to see racially healthy people say, "No, we're not going to go along with our own racial suicide." And this is actually from Big League Politics. And it's Japan rejects order from the Pope from Pope Francis that they must accept more third world refugees. Pope Francis has ordered to Japan that they must take refugees from the Third World has prompted considerable backlash from Japanese people who do not want to see their culture destroyed by unwanted foreigners. In a special way, I ask you to extend the hand of friendship to those who come here, often after great suffering, seeking refuge in your country, Pope Francis said to an audience of 900 during his recent visit to Japan. Indeed, a group of refugees is present with us, and your kindness to them will show that they are not strangers, not in the least, for you regard them as brothers and sisters. Well, the Japanese may not go along with that. A social media backlash began following his comments, with Japanese people being unwilling to accept the Pope's platitudes about refugees. Do that first in the Vatican, tweeted one person. The tweet was liked by 14,600 people and received 4,700 retweets. That wish we cannot accept. Impossible, tweeted Kazuo Ishikawa, a former government official who now works in the public policy realm. There is little we can do as we don't have a system to support them. Japanese people have only negative images of refugees. It will be impossible unless that is addressed, said a college student. One Twitter user noted that accepting refugees has damaged the West and how Japan shouldn't import policies that are dooming Europe, dooming Europe to their nation, to Japan. And he's absolutely right. He can see what most of us feel. But of course, we're not supposed to say anything, or we're supposed to reject the evidence of our senses. And that is, mass acceptance of refugees has fundamentally changed our countries. We've now got refugees running rampant in Sweden. Swedish girls being raped en masse, and Swedish feminists, of course, because they side more with the foreigners than with their fellow women, basically tell these women to shush and be quiet, or you'll sound like a racist, or, well, you'll just encourage anti-immigrant sentiment. Well, wait a second, the woman's being raped. Doesn't she get some consideration? No. The Japanese can clearly see this, and they can see this is depravity. This is degeneracy. It's not working so well in the West. Why should we accept this crazy man's advice? Quote, here's another tweet. I am sorry. We've seen how European countries have failed terribly. Even so, do you still say that? First of all, we're not a country where Christians are dominant. Would you please ask other Christian countries, such as America, to take more refugees? An interesting point. A Japanese pro-refugee group begged Twitter to censor comments in order to mute criticism against refugee settlement in Japan. I've warned you, and I know you know this, diversity, among other things, is a code word for censorship. Delightful here that the pro-refugee group wants critics censored. Quote, tweets that would inflame refugee phobia, xenophobia, are growing. Twitter should deal with its own platform that is being used to inflame xenophobia, said a pro-refugee account. Pope Francis isn't just reviled by Japanese, he's also despised within his own church. Catholic leaders demanded reprisal against the Pope for his blatant heresy earlier this year. And the resistance against Pope Francis, who has used his powerful position atop the Catholic Church to promote Marxism, is growing among his own ranks in the church. Many of the top clergymen and scholars have signed a letter to Pope Francis accusing him of heresy and urge bishops to take the steps necessary to deal with this grave situation. We take this measure as a last resort to respond to the accumulating harm caused by Pope Francis's words and actions over several years, which have given rise to one of the worst crises in church history, the signatories wrote. We limit ourselves to accusing him of heresy on occasions where he has publicly denied truths of the faith and then consistently acted in a way that demonstrates that he disbelieves these truths that he has publicly denied. The letter was signed by some of the most influential Catholic minds in the world, including Father Aidan Nichols, a renowned theologian. The signatories wanted to make it clear that they did not take this stand and these measures lightly. quote, we limit ourselves to accusing him of heresy on occasions where he has publicly denied truths of the faith. We assert that this would be impossible since it would be incompatible with the guidance of the church by the Holy Spirit. So there is considerable pushback. The Pope worships the false doctrine of globalism, among other things. when I visited Japan, I bounced this idea off Japanese. I just wanted to see what they would say, and I used the diversity is our greatest strength slogan, and said, well, you know, there are people in the West, and of course the Pope would be one of them, who say that your country would be far better if you, say, brought in, let's say an arbitrary figure, 5 million people from, let's say, Africa, maybe 5 million people from Latin America, and 5 million people from the Middle East, because you understand diversity is our greatest strength. And the Japanese people I dealt with, they're very polite people, and they would they kind of look and they're trying to figure out, just what is this guy trying to say. And they're trying to compute this. Diversity would be our greatest strength, having all these people who are not Japanese, or let's say Muslims and people from the Middle East and Africa, what do we say? And finally, one person that said to me, and I thought that, this is so simple. You've nailed this absolutely on the head. He said, "Well, if we did that, then we'd no longer be Japanese." I thought, bingo, exactly. And that's the point. You no longer be Japanese. And that's, of course, exactly what's happening to us. If this forced mass third world immigration imposition of diversity continues, we will no longer be Canadians or Americans or French or Germans. We will be something else. I thought the Japanese who responded were just ever so bang on. Well, part of this same article, which I posted, also looks at Bolivia. And the Bolivian president, Evo Morales, has had to resign. He's a radical socialist and a native Indian. And the opposition condemns Pachamama. Now, what's Pachamama? Well, we will find out. At La Paz, Bolivia, a Bolivian opposition leader is replacing Pachamama with the Bible as the country's president resigns. Opposition leader Luis Fernando Camacho entered the presidential palace outside of La Paz to request President Evo Morales' resignation. This is about 2 weeks ago. He then fled to Mexico. That's Morales did. Morales agreed to step down, particularly because of cheating in the election, all sorts of election irregularities. A photo from Camacho's visit to the president's residence shows him kneeling and placing a Bible on top of the Bolivian flag. Now that's the man who demanded that, or brought the message that Morales should resign. One of Camacho's supporters said during the presidential palace visit, quote, "The Bible is returning to the government palace. Pachamama will never return. Today, Christ is returning to the government palace. Bolivia is for Christ." There are widely held suspicions that Bolivia's October 20th election was rigged by Morales' administration. The Supreme Electoral Court stopped releasing data for almost 24 hours the day of the election. When it started publishing results again, it had Morales winning his fourth term in office by a sizable margin. In the days that followed, millions of Bolivians turned to the streets to protest. Morales is a socialist but claims to be a Catholic. He's also devoted to Pachamama, a Latin American Mother Earth fertility figure, and there's a picture of her, the protruding lips, ugly breasts, a big gut. I don't know if that means she's pregnant, but just hideous. But anyway, statues of Pachamama were prominent during the October Pan-Amazonian Synod of the Vatican. Faithful Catholics were outraged. The mix is a pagan symbol, you see. With one group of laity snatching the fertility idols and throwing them into the Tiber River. Good for them. A few weeks later, this Catholic magazine got a video interview with the leader of the group who pitched the statues into the river. The newly ousted Bolivian president may have been involved behind the scenes in having the statues displayed at the Amazon Synod in Rome. Catholic journalist Edward Pontin stated on Twitter, "Evo Morales, who's just resigned as Bolivia's president, had a devotion to the Pachamama and reportedly was a key figure in reviving it and having it at the Amazon Synod." Pontin drew attention to an August 1st tweet, "We start the month of Pachamama with an offering of thanksgiving." When Morales met with Pope Francis in 2015, he gave the Supreme Pontiff a crucifix in the shape of a hammer and sickle, a symbol of socialism. A crucifix in the shape of a hammer and sickle. Camacho announced his plans to demand Morales' resignation to a rally of supporters in Santa Cruz on November 4th. He declared, "I'm not going with weapons, I go with my faith and my hope. With a Bible in my right hand and a letter of resignation in my left hand." He said of the pre-written resignation letter, "We will deliver this letter in unity. This letter is not from Santa Cruz, it's from all of Bolivia, and it will be approved by all Bolivians, because we all want to build a country with democracy and freedom." This Camacho gentleman is a very religious fellow. He came with a Bible, and a man accompanying him had a statue of Our Lady of Fatima. Critics of the Bolivian opposition movement have accused it of having racist overtones, since Morales was Bolivia's first indigenous, that's Indian, president. The real tension there in Bolivia between Christianity and the Indian paganism. I find this interesting because, once again, it strongly suggests that the diversity just doesn't work. It's not a good thing. Not working out too well. This is Paul Fromm. I'm going to take my musical break now. I want to play a a song that by Ray Stevens. Ray has been around for many years. He's just an incredibly gifted performer. And he's really great with satire. And this is a song he's done about global warming. He just always manages to come up with just the right comic touch. Well, that's actually an ad, which we are trying to suppress here. This is the global warming song from Ray Stevens. And from the CD or DVD called We the People. So this is Ray Stevens and the global warming song.
Now here we have two real pioneers embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Gulliver brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change, thereby being in the catbird seat in a new Florida. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean, but man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Next up on the real estate show, we have the Gulliver Brothers, live via satellite from the east coast of Antarctica. Hello, boys, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm Gary, Barry Gulliver. This is my younger brother, Justice Gulliver. Thanks for having us on the show.
You bet. What actually do you have available in the way of land?
We got beautiful home sites available, which ocean front once the ice melts a little bit. And it's cold. And now we've got some beautiful farms and more inland as soon as we lose about 40 feet of this snow. Oh, Lord.
I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Well, boys, what's the weather like down there? Sounds cold.
Well, it's not too bad. 62 below, but at the moment wind chills is 100 below. But spirits are high. We've been told it's definitely going to rise in a few little while. There's records and 7 feet of snow and all. But Al Gore said it's going to be okay. Oh, Lord. Well, Justice, run. Here comes a polar bear.
I'm all for working hard just to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Well, we'd just like to thank the Gullibles for joining us today. Barry Gullible, any last words for those who may be looking to relocate once the rest of the world floods? Oh, my goodness. Okay, Justice, how about you?
I can't feel my feet.
That's Ray Stevens, and the global warming song. I think he does just a fantastic job with that. This is Paul Fromm, and here's another parody that I hope you'll enjoy, and this is based on Gordon Lightfoot's song, the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, but this is the Wreck of the Hillary Clinton. well, at least I thought that's what we were getting. That did not seem to want to pop up. So this is another Ray Stevens song. The skies just ain't friendly anymore.
So I said to myself, hey, listen, self, you ought to get on an airplane, go first class. Now, we hadn't been on a plane in years, not because of any flying fears. We just hadn't wanted to get any place further than a tank of gas. So I made reservations and packed one bag, and Charlene packed everything she could drag, and we took a cab to the passenger drop-off zone. Yeah, I gave them our tickets and showed them ID so that they could be sure it's her and me. But then at security, you won't believe what all that went on. Whoa, the skies just ain't friendly anymore since flying became a contact sport. You take off your coat and belt and shoes, but that's not all they make you lose. No, the skies just ain't friendly anymore. Well, I took off the shoes and rings and watch, and the guy said, I need to check your crotch, and I need to see those liquid toiletries. And he gave me a grope and a squeeze and a pat, and I tell you, friends, when I go to the vet, they treat my old bird dog with more dignity. Yeah, and there's a woman in line in front of my wife, and I've never seen nothing like it in my life. A guy grabbed hold of her like it was her honeymoon.
Uh-oh. If he touches me like he touched her,
Charlene said,
he'll buy me dinner first, and then we'll have to get us a motel room.
Whoa, the sky just ain't friendly anymore since flying became a contact sport. Make you lose, no, the skies just ain't friendly anymore. Well, I retrieved her luggage and rented the car and said, self, Philadelphia ain't that far, and I have to be subjected to all this mess. Yeah, but as I was leaving, I saw Charlene on her third trip through the body street. Takes all kinds of make up this world, I guess. Now I only pray that some son of depravity don't hide TNT in a body cavity, cause imagine then what they'll put us through. Yeah, Obama, Nancy, Harry, and Hillary would probably say, well, what's the big mystery? Just let them eat cake and fly private jets like we do. Whoa, the skies just ain't friendly anymore since flying became a contact sport. Take off your coat and belt and shoes, that's not all they want you to lose. The skies just ain't friendly anymore. You know, when you think about it, those TSA folks probably don't like it any more than we do. Well, some of them might like it a whole lot. Well, I guess it's don't ask, don't tell. I was just thinking about, I've been for a full body x-ray scan, but to tell you the truth, I just don't look good naked anymore. Yeah, but Charlene, she got extra copies of hers. Says she's gonna use them on next year's Christmas cards. Yeah, she's been through so many times, we don't need a nightlight anymore. She got her part-time job down there at the lighthouse. I know what I'm gonna get her for her birthday. A shade. A big shade.
Yeah, And that's Ray Stevens. The skies just ain't friendly anymore. Here's another great entertainer from yesteryear, and that's the Possum, George Jones. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio.
Sincere, yes, I'll wait till you're through living in your tender years. I've been living a new way, of life that I love so. But I can see the clouds are gathering, and the storm will wreck our home. For last night he hooked you tightly, and you didn't even show. This is true, for I've been watching you from the window up above. You must have thought that I was sleeping, and I wish that I had been. But it's best to get to know you and the way your heart can see it.
George Jones, back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers, side by side, for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. Maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound, plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.